What's the area we expect to see the most improvement from week one to week two? We answer that and more on this week's mailbag. Welcome in to the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Prehm, Eric Scopel on the show. As always, it's a Monday. Happy Labor Day. It's a Monday mailbag edition of the show. We should remind you right now that for the next day or so, depending on when you listen to this podcast, DuckTerritory.com, we're offering our best promo of the year right now. 75% off a subscription to DuckTerritory.com. Just use the link in the bio or go to DuckTerritory.com and click on the subscribe button to save a huge amount of money. 75% off. It's our biggest sale of the year. You won't save any more money the rest of the year in this capacity. And it's the most impactful way to help support the show. So please consider doing that if you are not subscribing. If you are, thank you very much. We love it. We hope to see you on the site. We'll talk to you there about the Ducks. And look, Oregon 1-0, right?
Yep.
There's a lot of questions that are coming from the mailbag from Oregon's 34-27 win over Boise State on Saturday, week one of Autzen Stadium. It was certainly a good game, certainly an interesting game, and certainly a game that we walked in with a lot of questions. We got some of those answered. And probably, Eric, we walked out of there with probably the equal amount of new questions about this program and where it's going.
I think we're not the only ones with questions because,
yes.
Excuse me, we got an outpouring here from the fan base. We got four questions prepped here, 50-50 split, some from the Duck Territory message board, the Duck Pond, the others from X, formerly Twitter. We're just kind of cast a wide net going forward. So if you guys are new to the show or want to participate, you can reach out on social. And I think something we will do, we're not quite ready to start doing it yet. I think we'll start making these go live Monday morning, probably in the 9:30, 10 o'clock range, somewhere, you know, sometime in that first couple hours of the morning for you guys to interact with us. So if you guys want to be a part of that, maybe we'll debut that either next week or the week after leading into USC. May actually be the right approach. Might be more interest there as opposed to Portland State. But that's something we're going to tinker with, and that'll kind of give us an expanded mailbag because we'll have some prepared questions, and then we'll let the listeners, the viewers kind of create the show from there. But yeah, like you said, Matt, we have questions. Fans had questions, and we're going to start with this one here from @OregonMadeMe87 from X, who asks, with most of the issues being self-inflicted, does this game become a blessing in disguise for Lanning and the staff moving forward? It can be, right? Like, they have to make it be one. You know, playing poorly doesn't necessarily mean you're going to play well the next week unless the team takes it to heart, unless there are, you know, clear improvements made in practice and correcting some of the areas. And, you know, having rewatched the game now, obviously watched it the first time, I feel the same way. Like, there were self-inflicted is the right term here that Oregon made used. There was a lot of mistakes that were nothing to do with Boise State. And I don't want to take credit away from the Broncos. And I actually have a question that I'm going to spur on Matt later on the show that he's not prepped for. That's kind of Boise State related, because I do think we should touch on that. Maybe we'll do that after answering this one. But so much of this was Oregon making mistakes that weren't Boise State related. You know, the muff punt, give Boise State credit for, I kind of liken it to in the NBA, some of the hand fighting you see that gets lost, like a Reggie Miller or a Ray Allen. Those three-point shooters are always so good at using their hands and extra little things. Like, that's sort of what the Boise State coverage guy did in terms of getting a hand on Evan that was discreet and not seen by the officials. So, like, I guess give him the credit there. But Evan also needs to field that punt, and that's on Evan. And so many of these penalties, and there were 10 of them, like, six were pre-snap, two were post-snap, two were pass interferences that were on balls downfield that I'm not really going to blame. I still think Aaron Flowers is way too physical. And the Eam Offords was, I think, also the right call. But again, I'm not going to blame him for being aggressive and trying to make a play and create a turnover. But Bear Alexander and Peyton Woodyard, 15-yarders after the play's blown dead. You know, and then three offensive pre-snap, three defensive pre-snap. Those couple of those defensive ones felt really bad. Like, I still think that Amari one is one of the sillier penalties I've seen from a player of his caliber in a minute.
Really bad.
It was really bad. So all that said, you know, and there were some missed blocks, by the way, on a lot of, like, people were up in arms over the screen passes. They did work a couple times when it was well blocked. Also did not work well when it wasn't well blocked. And there's a couple where there wasn't, like, the first fourth down that didn't get converted.
Yep.
They just didn't have a blocker out there. And so, like, Stewart gets the ball and turns up field and there's just a guy right there. And I don't know what you expect him to do. Maybe it was De'Aaron on that one. I think it was Stewart, actually. But still, either way, like, there's just kind of execution errors and mistakes being made here. And so you're right. If you're Oregon and you clean up the penalties, you clean up some of the mental errors, you improve as a blocking team out in the perimeter, you shore up some of the stuff between the tackles for the offensive line, they can take a big jump in 1 week. They can take a big jump in 2 weeks. And then 3 weeks from now when they play USC, this could be like a totally different team. So I think that's right. I'm sure Lanning is probably excited by the fact that they didn't come out and just roast them to a certain extent, but he also understands, like, you know, we need to make the most of this opportunity. We can't just expect guys to, you know, take the right lessons from this unless we instruct them properly.
I kind of touched on a little bit of this post game in our post game instant reactions podcast. I do think it's a blessing. I do, you know, the players themselves have said as much. You know, Dante Moore was, I'm happy it was close because it showed us we're not where we thought we were when you could have played an FCS team or a really poor group of six team and won that game 42-10. And does that really show you anything? It just kind of masks your deficiencies because you have such a wide talent gap. So this serves as a wake-up call. It certainly shows us that Oregon has some work to do. It certainly shows us that they've got to get better. And you walk away feeling disappointed and maybe isn't the right word. Let down maybe is the correct word of we thought there was so much more with Oregon football coming in. And week one, we were let down by just how much work they still have to do. But at the end of the day, they still got the win. They're 1-0. There's going to be overreactions. I've already seen one, and you know, I think part of it's going to be clickbait and trying to get people to troll and rage and engage and engagement farming. Andy Staples has dropped Oregon entirely out of his college football playoff projections. like that, there's going to be overreactions, like 100%. This team is still a playoff team. There's people that are going to doom and gloom it, and there's going to be people that are going to say, oh, everything's fine, totally great, everything's humming, you know, don't worry about it, it's just a one-off. Like, no, like, they've got things they've got to get better at, and this first game shows them. And really, you know, Dan Lanning, the ultimate motivator, right, now has a bunch of ammo in his clip after all fall camp of this team hearing how great they were, and then when they went and played their first opponent, they didn't come close to representing what they were perceived to be, and now they've got to earn that trust back a little bit.
I mean, flat out, that did not look like the number two team in the country, right? That's not a performance that is aligned with a team with that sort of a ranking. Dropping them out of the playoff picture entirely is just absolutely goofy behavior. And I guess if you're going to do it every week of like who are the 16 most impressive teams or 12 most impressive teams this week, this is who's in my playoff picture. Sure, maybe Oregon wasn't one of the 12 most impressive teams, but to long-term project who's going to be there at the end, to not include Oregon because they struggled for, you know, a quarter and a half or so and then picked it up in the second half and actually played pretty well. Like, they dominated that game kind of after half there. And I know people were frustrated when we used the term dominated in the last podcast. I think that was more in reference to the box score of, you know, the totality of the numbers suggest Oregon –
I mean, the second half scored, it was 20-10 in favor of Oregon. The Ducks had almost doubled Boise State in yardage. They threw for almost three times as many passing yards. They had more penalties, yes. But the average play perspective was 10 yards to one. The time of possession was basically the same with Boise having the ball for just a minute more. Statistically, everything in the second half said Oregon dominated this game.
And it was 27-10 if you take the last – if it's 32 minutes that you're taking into account with the two-minute drill there. So, like, yeah, I think people are going to overreact right now. People are seeing these teams for the first time. You're going to think teams are way better, way worse than they are. I wouldn't overstate it. What I wanted to ask you, Matt, and then we can jump into the second question here. Where do you think Boise State would finish in the Big Ten?
It's a very good question.
I posted something on the message board. I asked a couple other people. I got a really wide array of answers. I'm curious where your head would be at with
that. I want to look at the Big Ten standings just so I can have like a visual. So let me pull that up really quickly.
What I was going to say, use the preseason media poll.
I think they're obviously not better than Oregon because Oregon won that game.
Sure.
They're not going to be better than Ohio State. So now they're third. They're not better than Indiana. So now they're fourth. I would probably lean USC.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Ahead of them. So now they're somewhere at least best case fifth in the conference. I'd probably put Penn State.
Yep, definitely.
Ahead of them. So now they're sixth. But after that, Eric, I'm not sure. Michigan didn't look great. They should have lost to Western Michigan.
No kidding.
Illinois is reloading. You look at Nebraska, they're reloading. UCLA is reloading. I don't think Washington looked good at all against a very poor Washington State team. I mean, look at Washington State and look at Boise State. Those are two teams in the same conference. One looked like a true middle tier to like second or third type caliber program of the old Pac-12. And the other one looked like a true group of five middle of the road program. And it was not Washington State who looked like the upper tier team. Washington struggled against Washington State to move the football. And, I think Boise is better than Washington. I think if they played today, they probably win that game. So if I were to answer that question, I would probably say Boise's probably like somewhere in the six or seven range in the Big Ten standings. And in the six or seven range, you're probably going to be a nine, maybe even a sneak in as a 10 win team.
Yeah. I thought more like 7 to 10 range, you know, and it's hard to say in a one-off performance. This is the thing with Boise their fans must hate hearing this analysis of like, what could they do over the totality? Would they get worn down in the big boy conference, like the Big Ten or not? I just bring it up to say, I think they're a top half team for sure in the Big Ten, and Oregon's going to play a lot of teams in the Big Ten that are going to give them nowhere near the game they just got from the Broncos. And so kind of a tip of the hat to Boise State. I think some people thought we kind of overlooked their contributions to why this game was as close as it was. But I think that team, we probably undersold. I think they played really solid football. They didn't miss a lot of tackles. You know, obviously we remember the DeCorian Moore where he sheds two guys. I don't think that was necessarily like bad on Boise as much as it's just a guy making an incredible play for Oregon. But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to be curious to see what Boise does this year. I think there's a chance they could run the table from here with the way that Pac-12 schedule sets up. Next week against Memphis at home is going to be maybe the biggest game the rest of the way for them. If they win that game, they will be pretty heavy favorites, the rest of the way. So that's going to be worth monitoring here as we assess Oregon, because if you recall back in 2024, the narrative after Boise State close game was, oh my gosh, they almost lost to a Mountain West team. This team's not for real. And then Boise State ends up being one of the teams that, you know, makes the playoff and I think has a bye. So just keep an eye on Boise as a team to kind of monitor in terms of how we're going to assess this team. So much of it, though, had nothing to do with them and had all to do with Oregon. I think that's why you should feel a little bit more comfortable with where this team's headed, especially if they clean things up. But they have to do that. And that's the point of this question here from Oregon Made Me 87. All right. Let's hop over to our second question of the show. This one from a frequent asker of questions from the Duck Territory message board, Dr. For Quacks, who asks, what is the single area you are most concerned about that you would like to see improvement in week two? And then I don't know, Matt, if you saw this, there's a little extra for you. Also, Matt, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much are you regretting not going to Stillwater to play on their golf course? Why don't we start with the second part and then we can jump into the part that's actually probably more interesting for fans?
Yeah, Oklahoma State's, I guess, college campus facility that the team plays at is like top five in the country. I was a little bummed about that. I shouldn't say a little. I was a lot bummed when I found out about that, because when we went to Texas Tech, I went to the Rawls course, and this is another top five facility in the country. And I played that course. And it's like one of my favorite courses. It was epic. I shot like my best round of my life too, which is awesome. But then I found out that Oklahoma State's course is private, and that would have made it a lot harder to get onto. I still feel like I probably could have finagled my way trying to figure out a way to get on and maybe could have done it. But the fact that it's a private course and it would have taken a lot of extra steps. And then when we were leaving Autzen yesterday, or I should say Saturday, and you told me that it was like 105 with 50% humidity and still water. That sounds absolutely horrific. So my FOMO is decreasing, but it was already really high. I will say that it was already really high. I do like playing golf at locations when Oregon's on the road, and it's a September game, which means it's an automatic. You can play if you want. And so I am a little bummed there.
Yeah, this is, I hate when weather becomes a storyline, but yeah. It's going to be close to 100 degrees on Saturday and really high humidity. And so hydration will be I'm already nervous about who's going to and how they're going to ask this question to Dan tonight. But it will be brought up because this is an instance where weather will play a factor. Obviously, I don't anticipate it really matters too much, but like they're going to have to create some steps here. There's going to have to be some protocols in place to make sure everybody's hydrated. All right. To the main question here, though, there's a lot of things. I think one thing I will say, especially going into Oklahoma State, which we know is run by Eric Morris, who at North Texas led the country last year in passing yards. I want to see the pass rush just get after this guy. You know, Mesta Maker had kind of a down game. He was one of the bigger transfer portal quarterbacks. I know Oregon, when Dante Morris kind of return or not was kind of up in question. There were some rumblings that Oregon had kind of gotten involved there about maybe seeing if he would transfer to Oregon before he ended up following his head coach to OK State. Did not have a great debut. Obviously, they lost to Tulsa. I want to see the pass rush unleash. And I thought at times, especially late in that game, they did their job. Finished with three. They ended up with, I think, like a dozen or so pressures based upon PFF tracking data, that they were decent on Saturday. Like, certainly ahead of where we saw them a lot of last year. There's going to be – this is a game where Oregon should be ahead. And again, we'll see if they do pull up their end of the bargain here. I mean, I think we made a lot of assumptions about how week one was going to play out, and we were very wrong. If they're able to build the lead here, Oklahoma State's going to throw the ball 40, 50 times possibly in this game. Get some pressure off the edge. Get some internal pressure. You know, bring some blitzes. You know, I would love to, if it is a case where Oklahoma State throws it 50 times or somewhere in that range, get six sacks, get 20 pressures, really make it difficult on those guys, really flex. I mean, that was supposed to be a big, you know, the biggest strength of this defense. And it's kind of funny. My girlfriend went to the game on Saturday and hadn't maybe listened to all my podcasts and was like, was the defensive line the biggest weakness of this team? And I said, no, they're supposed to be the strength of the defense, maybe the best position group on the team. People were saying this is maybe the best or one of the best defensive lines in the entire country. And, you know, I'm not going to say she has she's seeing 20/20 vision in terms of analyzing the game. But if a casual fan is watching and is uncertain, you know, it thinks that the defensive line is maybe the weakness, that suggests they didn't play that well. Right. And, you know, and I think they probably played better than some people want to give them credit for, but they need to flex. This is the group that's supposed to really be leading this defense. And I thought at times they were a little quiet, and especially early on in that game against the run, there were some kind of moments where you're going, oh, okay, well, this wasn't what I had down on my bingo card. So I think that front, I want to see that front really flex and dominate this week.
I don't have the PFF snap counts in front of me for Oklahoma State, but to your point about the defensive line and the marked improvements, the pressures, I think that's where I would probably land too. And I'll give another one just for context, but I do want to say a real small piece about the D-line. Oklahoma State's offensive line already was kind of shaky going into the year. And it sounds like their most experienced guy, what's his name? Jacob Sexton. He was supposed to be like one of their key guys. They're one of their most experienced guys. He suffered an injury six snaps into the game, couldn't come back, probably out for a long period of time, not just Oregon, but just a long period of time. They rotated three different guys then at the tackle spots throughout this game. Ashton Leppo, Sean Torgensen, and Desmond Mayaga at the tackle spots. I don't know how they did, but Mestemaker was sacked twice. He was hurried 10 times by a Tulsa defense. Not the greatest thing. And then this comes with the fact that they're also without Braden Nelson, who was a starter for North Texas this past season, came over with Eric Morris to Oklahoma State. And he has dealt with an injury during fall camp, and he was supposed to be the team's best offensive lineman overall. So they're now down two top guys along their offensive line unit. This feels like a situation where we should see marked improvement. We're going to see better focus. We're going to see heightened, you know, demand for execution along the defensive line. And they're probably playing an offensive line from their opponent perspective that's way worse than what they saw the year, the week before. So we could see a quick, again, on paper, maybe to the blind eye, big improvement here. For the defensive line. Now, to give a different answer, I would want to see just a better commitment and a better consistency with, I guess, maybe more so that with your run game.
Yep, totally agree.
From Oregon's offense, one rush attempt in the first quarter is a wild stat to me. You look at their overall running capabilities, and it was solid, 25 carries for 119 yards. They did have three carries for a -7 between Evan Stewart and then Dante Moore getting sacked. So you kind of adjust for that, and it's 22 carries for 126 yards between the two running backs. But again, you take out that 40-yard run by Jordan Davidson. It happened. It's in the stat log. It matters. It factors in. But you take away that one play out of 22 plays that they had on the ground, and their rushing numbers all of a sudden become very pedestrian, very mediocre, under 4 yards per carry without that run in place. With it, Oregon's average is over, I think, five.
It's like 5.5.
5.5 with it. So it's a big data point in their run game. Without it, it's putrid. With it, it's respectable. So I would like to see Oregon's run game become more consistent. I don't necessarily need to see them run the football 40, 50 times in this game if they don't want to. Maybe this team's going to be one that airs it out more than they do running the football. But you've got to be more effective when you do run the football. De'Aaron Hill only having 36 yards on 10 carries with how explosive he was last season, that needs to get fixed. That needs to get rectified.
Yeah, I think that from like an individual and offense that I want to see just utilized differently, I would be De'Aaron, or just maximized, like maybe not utilized differently, but just maximized, because, you know, they didn't run the ball well between the tackles. Davidson's run was an in-between the tackle run, by the way, and Trent Ferguson had probably the best block from an interior lineman, at least on a run play that I saw on that play, in terms of just making space. It was a huge hole that he was able to run through, but I felt like De'Aaron was kind of stuck in neutral the whole game, and I would love to see his home run ability. And then I guess the flip side on defense, to kind of highlight an individual player, I know this wasn't part of the question, but back to my, what do I want to see, you know, worked on the most, the pass rush. Nasir Wyatt played 7 snaps in that game and had two hurries, had the highest PFF grade in the team, according to PFF, obviously, if it's the PFF grades. This guy needs to play more than 7 snaps. I'd like to see him play 15 snaps per game, you know, on plays where they think it's a pass. And Oklahoma State might be a game where he gets out there a lot because they are looking to throw the ball significantly more. So there's definitely some individuals you want to see grow. And I think those are two areas to improve on. And I'll just throw one last one out here before we jump into the next question. We don't have to spend too much time. The Aaron Flowers, Carl Williams, Peyton Woodyard, Devon Benjamin, that like the nickel and that
rotation,
the safety opposite of Coy, they need much better play out of those two positions. Need to be better, just point blank. And that's something I'm curious to see if there's growth there. And I'm really starting to feel like Benjamin didn't play nearly as much as Carl Williams. I think that needs to change. And Aaron Flowers needs to be a lot better in coverage, or else they might need to make some changes there. He's great in the open field. He had like 8 tackles. He's really good as a reliable player in space. But, man, he's kind of messy out there when the ball is in the air. And we saw that on that PI call, which he made in the third quarter. So those two positions, that star and that strong safety. They need better play from those two positions on defense.
Well, and what's interesting is Oregon was moving Brandon Finney around quite a bit, not just at cornerback. He played mostly as the wide corner. 53 snaps were there, but he was in the box for 7 snaps. He actually played free safety a couple times as well for Oregon. And I'm wondering if just kind of the maturation of Brandon Finney's development in his game, do we see that kind of get explored a little more? Can they put him out there? Because he's your best guy in the secondary by far.
I think he and Parrish.
Yes. Put him out there a little bit more where you need it, because you've got, in theory, a plethora of cornerbacks that can kind of play those positions. But that's going to be something to watch, is how long do they let the current safeties operate before maybe throwing in a Jet Washington or an Xavier Lurice who didn't play?
Trey McNutt would be a guy I would mind seeing.
Trey McNutt. And then if that doesn't work, or if it's a better option, do they maybe look at maybe moving a Finney over? Because he did line up multiple times as a safety and a deep safety at that. And he also came into the box quite a bit, like Dylan Thinneman did last year.
Well, yeah. And it, you know, it's interesting because the PFF data also suggests he was pretty poor in coverage. It's his worst graded coverage game of his career. He gave up 4 receptions for 54 yards. Those are both team highs for this game. Not saying he's a bad coverage player by any means. We know what he is. But Offord and Obadegwu had significantly better. And this is a one-off game. We're using PFF grades. All the grain of salt. There's so much salt on this table right now that, like, you probably don't want to eat your food. But but my point is, like, maybe at some point you fiddle with Finney's out there in another role and you have those two, Offord and Obadegwu, as your outside corners primarily. Maybe that's a long-term fit here, because I think there are some liabilities we're seeing. You know, I mean, Carter Williams had a terrible opening drive.
Yes.
And Aaron Flowers, again, for as good as he is as a tackler in open space, like, I don't know if he needs to be out there on pass downs. And if you have as many good coverage athletes as you have, maybe that's something worth looking into. So we went all over the place for Dr. Quack's question there. So, but I think after game one, there's a ton of things we're concerned about, things we want to see improve. I think we hit at least 3 that were worth bringing up. So, good question there from him. Let's jump over to this one from @QuackRealist from X. Can you guys discuss the lack of Tommy Tofi on the field? Seems like everyone thought he would get significant playing time somewhere along the line. # aughts and audibles. If you haven't seen the participation report or the PFF snap counts, Tommy Tofi did not play in this game. That's just the way it played out.
A little surprising, but is it
surprising? I'm not shocked, because freshman, it's a slow burn. I know it wasn't last year with DeCorian and Brandon Finney, but the number of offensive linemen that, like, start game one or have big roles game one, like, that wasn't Josh Connerly. Like, no, not everyone is Penei Sewell. And Tommy Tofi, for as intriguing and enticing of a prospect he was, is not like the highest rated offensive line recruit they've ever signed. I mean, Ihanacho is up there in that case as a 5-star. He saw the field, but only on special teams. Like, Oregon clearly wanted to lean on some veteran guys. So, like, I'm not crazy surprised. I guess I will say the fact that they played 7 offensive linemen in traditional offensive lineman roles and 8, if you include Janoris Wilson, who played as, like, an additional tackle when they went to big packages for which happened quite a bit, actually, in that game. The fact they played 8 offensive linemen and none of them were the true freshmen is a little surprising to me. The fact that Tofi's not only behind Utu and Bennett, but also Yuli and Ferguson, like, they played 4 guards and not one of them was Tommy Tofi. I know he's looked at as a guard and a tackle, but they seem pretty confident with what they have at tackle, by the way. And I thought Zaire Addison played an outstanding game on rewatch. I thought he was really strong as a run blocker. Stronger as a run blocker than I thought maybe live. I don't want to say really strong, but they had a lot of success running to his side. Thought he handled himself really well. Fox created a right tackle. Don't know why none of us brought that idea up, because I think is probably a better fit as a right tackle than a left tackle. I think we're those two guys, that feels like it makes sense. I think there's longevity with those two. They both played every snap on Saturday, so the staff seems to think so. Tofi's path to the field, and Ihanacho is probably at guard. But right now they're saying, at least based on playing time, those guys are guards 5 and 6. You know, they're on the third line. So there's some work to do to get up above these veterans. You know, Bennett and Yuli are fifth-year players. Utu and Ferguson are a little bit younger, but guys who are also highly regarded prospects who've been developing. So, yeah, I'm surprised to a certain extent because there's a lot of hype. But when you see the way that they're operating and you consider how hard it is for true freshmen to contribute, especially at that position right away, I think it kind of makes probably more sense than we were giving credit for when we were all offseason. Like, Tofi's going to be a part of this. They're going to rotate him in, blah, blah, blah. I think that might happen, but clearly it's not this week.
I think this is just the classic case of spring game, one data point, and it gets blown way out of proportion. Not to say that Tommy Tolpe isn't going to be a dude. I mean, look, we thought he had a chance to start. We were projecting him as a possible player in contention to play. I don't know if you had him in the starting lineup, Eric, but I think you had him in your two deep.
But I had him and Utu at the left guard spot. Yes. That was my two.
And being in the two deep for an offensive line doesn't mean you're automatically going to play either, though. And, you know, so I'm not surprised he didn't play. I'll be a little surprised if he doesn't get into the game maybe this weekend or maybe next Friday against Portland State. And if they don't, it probably is because the game's close. And if the game's close, Oregon's got bigger problems than Tommy Tofi not getting into the football game. But I am curious to see how he plays out. I am curious to see. I mean, clearly at guard, they were rotating guys or they made changes in the second half. And that, to me, tells me the position isn't finalized yet. They're still kind of working things out. Maybe it's an injury-related thing. We knew Dave Ayuli was dealing with something during fall camp.
He had a huge brace on his arm, by the way, from that tricep tear that he had last fall. Yeah, I think he's probably not close to 100 right now, is my guess.
And so maybe it's that capacity of they're waiting for Dave Ayuli to get healthy and that's kind of thrown a wrench into the game plan. Don't know. But I guess for Tommy Tofi play fans, guys that want to see him on the field, to me the job's not solidified because they're rotating or they made rotations. And that opens the door for the guys that got into the game, but also – other guys like Tommy Tofi who didn't and could have an opportunity to work their way in this week or down the road.
And we should note freshmen in general really didn't have roles in this game. The only two freshmen played from scrimmage, only five played total. And one of those freshmen who played from scrimmage was Messiah Hampton, who seemingly is their number four receiver. Like, he's their fourth in line. And we should note Iverson Hooks, Jalen Lott were not available for this game for injuries. We'll see what Dan says, how much he wants to share later, but Hampton came and played two snaps, and one was when Jeremiah McClellan came down kind of awkwardly in the end zone and missed a play, and the other one was when DeCorian Moore, I think, got like some turf pellets in his eye in the fourth quarter there. So Hampton ends up playing two snaps in this game, mostly just because of injury. Like, they didn't rotate at receiver at all. And Devon Benjamin is the one who actually has a role. He played 18 snaps at the star position in this game and actually graded out per PFF pretty well. And certainly much better than Carl Williams. So right now, like, if you're projecting forward which freshman you're going to see play significantly against Oklahoma State, I think Benjamin's the only one you feel like really confident in it. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's out snapping or even maybe starting in place of Carl Williams as soon as this week, based upon what we saw. And we'll see how quick of a trigger Chris Hampton has with a decision like that. And you don't want to take it lightly, especially against a pass offense kind of like this one. But in general, freshmen, this 2026 class, not opening the season with the amount of usage I think we had anticipated. And I mean, in part because I thought Oregon would separate and be able to get to some of its third and fourth unit guys and frankly, even more of its second unit, because 38 players played in this game on Saturday. And offensively, they didn't even really get to anybody at tight end, running back, or receiver outside of their starters. And defensively, there were basically didn't rotate at a couple different spots either. We thought, I asked on the message board, like, which freshman are you most excited about? Give me your five. And it turned out most of the five people that were mentioned, that Kendra Harrison didn't play in this game. We didn't see Brandon Smith, who people were excited about. Gatlin Bear didn't play. Tofi, you know, didn't play. Hanacho got in, but not really. You know, defensively, Jet Washington, he got in, but he was just on special teams. Like, so many of these names that people were excited about just didn't factor into this game at all. And I think you'll see that change as the season goes on. But I, that was a bit of a surprise to me. And I think, again, a lot of it's probably game script related because you didn't want to throw out a bunch of freshmen in a competitive game in the fourth quarter or something. All right, let's finish it up with the last question for the show from the message board from Donde S. Cerveza. Great, great name there for him. How are you feeling about the D-line? I'd love to hear your thoughts on the rotation, the 5-2-4 alignment, and how at times Boise State was pushing them around the first half. Also, does it seem like a lot more tackles came from the D-line, whereas in the past, linebackers racked up more? Oh, I didn't put that on the screen. Sorry, we got to do that so people can see it if they are more visual in nature, as I am. I'll let you answer this one first. How are you feeling about the D-line? And I do have some thoughts about the rest of these questions or points he's making here.
Excuse me. I did think it was interesting that they went with the five-man rotation. It was typically going to be Mateo Uyunglele, Tatum Tuioti, Amari Washington, and then they would kind of have a rotation of the other two spots of Bear Alexander, Elijah Rushing, Aiden Breland, and Matt Johnson. Every once in a while, I think Dontre Robinson got in there as well. But that was kind of like the main group of guys. And they would pull off the star position in favor of having the fifth defensive lineman out there. It's certainly interesting. It's a 5-2-4. We don't see that very often in college football, but you know, Dante Moore said it right a couple weeks ago. It's a copycat league. Maybe they saw something that they liked about it. It's interesting because it bulks them up. I think in previous years, they probably couldn't do this a ton because of the versatility that a Mateo and a Tatum and an Amari Washington give you this season that they maybe didn't have to the full extent the last couple of seasons. I like it. It seemed to be effective at times, but it does leave you susceptible when you have that fifth lineman out there for play action. And if they somehow can kind of spread the field out pass wise, you've only got four DBs out there. So it puts a lot of pressure on your linebackers to be able to react and cover a lot of ground, which it feels like to another comment that we discussed a little bit after the show Saturday afternoon was, passing situations, they were really leaning into Devin Jackson's athleticism over Jerry Mixon's experience, which was a little bit of a surprise for you and I. And then they'd have Dylan Williams out there quite a bit too. So those guys, those three linebackers are going to have to perform in coverage if they go with the 5-2-4 and they get passed on, because while your pass rush is probably going to be pretty good, you're kind of exposed with your athleticism and your numbers on the back end.
Here's some snap counts for listeners who maybe didn't check it out. And by the way, we are posting those every Sunday. It's a VIP item, so take advantage of that 60% code down there. But we do post snap counts.
75% right now, though.
75% now, yeah. You're right. Good note there. But yeah, I've got it all posted here on the message board and on the website Duck Territory. So go take a look at that if you want. And again, if you want to be a subscriber, we've told you many times this podcast how you can change that. Oregon played 68 snaps on defense. Mateo Uyunglele played 67. Tatum Tuioti played 60. And Nasir White was the only true other edge to play. And again, it was only 7 snaps. So they stuck with a 2-man rotation there. They really moved guys around on that defensive line. And Bear Alexander, 50 snaps, led the way. Amari Washington played 42. Matt Johnson played 32. Aiden Breland played 20. Those four guys are their dudes right now. Elijah Rushing played 9. Dontre Robinson played 8 in kind of situational spots. I think when they went to 5 linemen was primarily when Dontre entered. So that's kind of where this is at in terms of the names to know. No Tank Jones. You know, no Blue Dantzler, some of these younger edge rushers that people were maybe excited to see. Dutch Horace got into the game, but only on special teams. I love the body types they have here and just the kind of athletes that they can put on the field. And I thought at times it looked really good. Now, back to the question here that Donde S. Cerveza is asking, again, great name. I'm probably going to say that every time I reference it. The run game was a little bit more successful from Boise early on in this game than you anticipated. The totality of it doesn't, nothing to scoff at. They have two really good running backs. Neither had a run over 10 yards. The average, like, I think about 3.5 yards per carry when you adjust for sacks and everything. Like, this was not a stalwart running performance from the Broncos. Like, they have two guys in Riley and Gaines they feel really good about. They were pretty well bottled in this game. You know, obviously Gaines gets in the end zone on a screen pass. There's some moments there that weren't great, but all in all, I think you feel okay. But early on in that game, it was just the way that first half played out in general. It was kind of like, man, this isn't what I anticipated we'd see. I thought they'd be more dominant. I thought they'd come out with a little more fire. I thought they'd be the ones kind of creating the momentum and pushing back. And it felt like it went the other way. So I think that's a good question and a good point there. And especially when you have the size and athleticism Oregon has with all those names I just read out, the fact that you kind of feel like maybe early in the game they got outplayed, not even maybe, I think they got outplayed early on in that game is something to be kind of aware of and understand. And that's why when I was asked by Dr. Quacks things I'm most concerned about, I'd like to see fixed, that's where I leaned, right, is just this defensive line, because we know how good they can be, and they frankly weren't early on. I think they got better as the game went on. To the last question about the linebackers racking up fewer tackles in this defense, it was really interesting, Matt, looking at the box score here, at the number of tackles that were made, and Oregon linebackers had 9 tackles total in this game. Bryce Betcher averaged 9 tackles per game last year. So there was a difference in terms of the amount of tackles being made there. But also, Bear Alexander has 8 tackles. Mateo Ungulale has 8 tackles. Tatum Tuioti has 6 tackles. Those guys, Amari Washington only had 1. And frankly, I think the most disappointing part of this defensive line was probably Amari Washington's play. I don't think he played well at all. And there's certainly growth there. And people maybe give him – I think he's more of an upside than a proven commodity at this point. And you just kind of hope and expect it's going to all click. Certainly didn't in the first game of the season. I think it will as the year plays on. But my point being, like, you had huge production in tackles from 3 of your defensive line starters. Like, they combined for 22 tackles, 3 of those guys. That's, like, what, 2.5 times more than what you got from your entire linebacker position? That's peculiar to me. That's interesting. And in rewatching it, Matt, I came away thinking, I thought Dylan Williams played the best of any of those guys, especially on rundowns. Like, he shot the gaps. He got in the backfield. He made some plays that didn't show up as tackles because he maybe didn't finish the play or there was some shared tackle there. But I thought he played really, really well. And frankly, I thought Jerry Mixon was maybe the weakest link there. But in general, linebacker, we knew going into the season was not going to be the best unit. I don't know if they played the worst of these guys, of these groups, though, because I came away feeling like safety to me was more of a concern outside of Coy Parrish in that star position. And the interior defensive line at times, especially early in that game, was really kind of a bummer. But PFF would tell you based on grades, and again, this is the grain of salt where fans will get pissed off and be like, don't ever acknowledge those grades again. PFF thought linebacker was the best position on the team on Saturday. I mean, all three of those guys had grades in the 70s, whereas you look at what they gave, like Mateo and Tatum and Amari, and Bear had like the best grade on the defense, but a bunch of those guys had really, really pedestrian numbers, whereas they actually thought like Jerry Mixon, Devin Jackson, and Dylan Williams played really well in that one.
Yeah, I was impressed too, just in real time. And then again, going back and watching the highlights, the condensed version of the game of Dylan Williams. And I don't want to say like he's going to like deserve to be a full-time starter, but it wouldn't surprise me. Again, like you said, 1 game sample size. So let's see how it continues to play out. But next couple of games will tell us a lot of the rotation frequency at linebacker, I think. If Dylan Williams continues to play like he did, he's going to deserve to be on the field more. And then it turns into maybe just like a continuous rotation of the 3 guys. And I agree with you at safety. What?
I just wanted to read you some stats. I mean, Dylan Williams and Jerry Mixon played the same number of snaps in that football game. They're already maybe at that point where they're rotating like that. Sorry to cut you off, but something I stood out to me when I was looking at snap counts.
And then I would love to, again, this is one where like if it was in a one-on-one setting, you could really do this easier with Dan Lanning, but I'd really love to get his feelings on, is this a concern at all in terms of the linebackers and their production being outperformed by the defensive linemen from a pure tackle perspective? Or is this how it's designed to be? Or is this just, hey, our defensive line played really good, and in theory, they're the first wave. They wrapped up. The second wave just didn't have an opportunity to make a tackle. you know, like so much of a defense is designed for certain things. Like I remember a long time ago, I think it was Nick Aliotti was the defensive coordinator, and someone was talking about the lack of tackles for the defensive line. And he got really offended because it's like, that's not their job. Their job is to eat blocks and create holes for our linebackers to shoot the gaps and fill and make the plays. That's who we're asking to make the tackles. It's not the defensive lineman. And so we don't know that answer with Dan Lanning. And I think it's on us to try and figure out how we can get him to talk about it, because I'm with you. I'm super fascinated of, you had so many guys up front, Bear Alexander, Mateo Uyunglele, and Tatum Tuioti, collectively 22 tackles between the three of them.
Yep.
That's more than Devin Jackson, Jerry Mixon, and Dylan Williams collectively at linebacker had. And that
they had nine.
Yeah. Like that's that's more than twice the number. So I'm gonna be real curious if that's by design, if that's just, hey, our D line played above and beyond, or our linebackers need to get better.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that's annoying is what you outlined is a perfectly reasonable way to approach a question. And if we were covering a different Oregon sports program and had a question like that, we'd get a reasonable answer. But that's not how it operates necessarily with Coach Lanning, who I think, to give credit to him, has been a lot more forthcoming and has been more reasonable in how he's approached certain questions. But you're right that there's a case where he gives you a really reasonable answer, and there's also a case where he shoots it down and you end up being like, well, I probably should cross that off the list of things I'm curious about, because he certainly didn't want me to be. I think the defensive line is going to have a great game against Oklahoma State. That's my early week prediction right here. I think they're going to really take it up a notch, because I do think they know how good they can be, and I think they're going to be told all week they didn't play up to standard.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Make sure to go and subscribe today. Get 75% off. It's our best deal of the year. You will not have an opportunity to save more money than now by signing up for a membership at duckterritory.com. 75% off. It's the most impactful way as well to help support this show and to continue to make it free for everyone out there. So you get wall-to-wall coverage of Oregon athletics, including football, basketball, women's basketball, baseball, softball, and more. We've got recruiting coverage at duckterritory.com. We've already got a post-weekend recap up, working on individual stories as well. And then Eric and I have gone wall-to-wall coverage from Saturday's Boise State game, now bleeding over to getting you ready for this weekend's game at Oklahoma State. And remind you, if you're listening on Monday tonight, or if you're listening sometime Tuesday, we spoke with Dan Lanning Monday night to kind of get his full review of Boise State and then kind of early thoughts looking ahead to Oklahoma State. And we'll have all of that on duckterritory.com. But until the next one, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.